Off the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at Churchill Downs, a couple of minutes to the start of the, this is sort of the red carpet portion of the of the Derby draw. And it's a moving target again, Casey. It's quite something, actually. I am amazed at what went on yesterday, and it's the same thing again today, where it says there's the Twitter feed, so we're watching the Twitter feed, but then on the main KentuckyDerby.com page, it says, you know, here's the draw, and it doesn't take you anywhere. It takes you, it's like that scene in Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. The coordinates are in the middle of the planet. It's like it takes you into the Khan. It takes you right into the middle. I don't get it. It's just amazing. This is yesterday's comedy as well. There it goes. It's live now, Case, it looks like. There you go. 1 minute ago at the top of the Twitter feed. Go with the Twitter feed. This is something that does. You know, when players complain about this, I completely understand. Because, I mean, I go to enough racetrack websites that, you know, you just get confounded. It's funny. Everybody complains about the Racinos. The nice part about the Racino side of things is, you know, there's so little attention paid to the racing that everything's easy to find because there's not a lot of it. You don't have to wade through. The Keeneland website, as great as all their things are, that is an area where it's search and hunt and peck to find basic things. It's crazy. Then there's the websites that there's one track website that literally changes every 30 days. It's like there's a new design to the website. You got to reorient yourself over and over again. I think now they're showing beautiful scenes around the Downs, and now they're upstairs into the Aristides Lounge. So, Case, I'll watch. And I think you'll probably hear some Ed and James actually James is late, but I couldn't. We made him late, I think. But we, you know, too valuable to. Oh my God, Joe Christofek wearing a jacket. I'm not sure if it looks like the maitre d' at Mama Leone's. That one's going to get us in trouble. I can tell you right away. There's Joe and Scott Shapiro. You know, we'll do, Case. We've only got about 10 minutes, so let me get some of this stuff in that if I don't do it now, we're never going to get to it. And I should mention, you know, the other day we had on Friday, I had Brian Sanfratello because we wanted to make sure that, you know, people looked at the two stakes today and four state-bred Pennsylvania races at Park. So in addition to Churchill, there's some good racing today around the country. Indiana and so forth. I mean, there's a pretty good Tuesday going on. But the two stakes at Parks, I actually put them on, I ended up liking them, and I put them on at the bottom of the Churchill. You know, I got the pick five selections up, and then I looked at these three races, and Chubb Wagon is going to be a very tough horse on the lead in the Unique Bella. She's perfect. I mean, this is probably the least known, undefeated horse in the country. Chubb Wagon, Lupe Preciado. who's had a solid winter and into now into the spring. Much the horse to beat. However, there's two horses making seasonal debuts. On the outside, Scott Lake has got the five-year-old Talent Search mare, I'm the Talent. And, you know, she comes back as a mature mare. She could be okay. And then there's Trolley Ride. And this is the craziest thing of the morning. I was up at like four, and writing this up, and I look down and I'm looking at this horse and she's okay. She left a winner at the end of her five-year-old year in September and has got steady work tab coming back for this race. She's 6-1 for Houghton, and Bernie Houghton is very good off the layoff. Then I see, oh, look, she's by Flashy Bull, who came up yesterday with Terry Finley. And then the craziest part of this, I see the mare, Proudly Irish. Oh, a mare at the time she was a filly. We claimed, Chuck Simon and I and the DT team, we claimed her for a nickel here at Churchill at the end of the fall meet. Back in, I don't know, 2000 and I don't even know, 2008, 2009. We claimed her for a nickel. Chuck brought her to Philly, where he moved, the tack to a training center in Jersey, and we ran her in Philadelphia under the late Jose Flores, and she got claimed for $7,500. And she made a few more starts after that, and then became a broodmare. And here's, I'm looking, I'm going, Proudly Irish, Proudly Irish. Why do I know that name? I know that name because we owned her for 20 minutes. It's pretty funny. This is a nice horse. She made $260,000. Maybe we should have kept Proudly Irish and made her a broodmare. anyway, this mare could come back and she's okay in here. Mike Maker's also got Ujjayi, and she's a, you know, she's a hard hitter. You know, she was second in the Houston Ladies Classic to Latruska. So, she turns back to 7/8. She also ran in the Latonia, and that was a disaster. This is a good race, the Unique Bella. And then the Paige McKenney, absolutely terrific. The Paige McKenney, you got five horses in here that can win this. I ended up picking, I think, Chili in Charge on the rail for Miguel Vera. But there's a few in here. Breezy Gust is going to try to wire them, but there is some other pace company, including Admiral Abe on the outside for Bob Mosco, who wins plenty. But Admiral Abe, to me, of the speed horses, he's less likely to me. He's a horse that absolutely has to have the lead to win. And I suppose if he gets it, he can win. But boy, I think that Breezy Gust is faster. So I went in that direction. I may use Admiral Abe. I think I use them as a backup, but I don't see him getting the lead. And when he hasn't gotten the lead, he hasn't won. Hockey Puck, okay in here for Aaron McClellan. Used that one, and somebody. Oh, wait for it, Eddie Coletti, the Fantasy Lane, the Uptown Charlie Brown team. And as we've said, he's been amazingly successful. Here's another example. Out of a posse mare, horses made $500,000. Six-year-old gelding. Unbelievable. And then in the nightcap, there's going to be a very short price. Giebert, who's very much a likely winner, but we're certainly going to root for our friend Will Schwartz. Mainline Racing, Kidnapped. There must be a story behind that. There's also the one Gravel Road in here who's okay. I think the other horse beside Giebert is probably Danzified. The Foxtail, and we know the Foxtail people too. Danzified, Alan Bedard. So very nice three-race sequence, and there's also a maiden special, but that I didn't really look at the maiden. I just looked at those stakes. So we got about 5 minutes or so before Travis Stone strides to the microphone, and I suppose me thinking that and saying that requires a nod to the person that strode to the microphone and the podium for years, and the late John Asher. And no trip to this venue for this event can be complete without a remembrance and a shout out and love to the Ashers and to one of the great personalities and journalists as he started and then racetrack executives in the game. He was the embodiment of Matt Wynn, literally the living embodiment of Matt Wynn. And we miss John every time we come here. A couple of things. Let me get this is going to work out perfect. Let's get a quick rundown on the weekend racing that I haven't talked about yet, and that includes the stake, right, from Keeneland. Keeneland wrapped up, and Warlike Goddess, Bill Mott. This filly, she's going places, I think. This is a really nice horse. Warlike Goddess with Leperu, 5-2. And George Krikorian, purchase. Krikorian does a nice job on on that front too, on the breeding side. There was a bunch of maiden races as well on the day, and the 2-year-olds, the Wesley Ward with Stone Street's Napa Spirit, and then he came back with Breeze Easy's Headline Report. That was the Gormley I brought up with Gary Young. That's one of the reasons we brought up Gormley, who feels like might be a surprising win early type. Napa Spirit was by Invisible Spirit. So that was your Keeneland action that closed out the season. And then, of course, at Churchill got started. I mentioned Field Day already, so I can get that out of the way. At Pimlico, a quick rundown of the stakes card, and that included Xanthique. Tom Morley, what a clever claim by Tom Morley. And Vin Lauer Racing turns around and wins this race. Got a very nice ride by Fergal Lynch and wins at 6-1. Xanthique, this has really been a terrific success for Morley. Lackey, which I brought up with James, of course, last week when we talked about the Frank Whiteley. Congratulations to Damon Del Dovico. And this is a personal favorite, an 8-year-old now. He is just amazing and posts a high 90s, 96 buyer for the son of Cuba. In the Henry Clark, Jonathan Thomas, who's been winning with alacrity of late. This for George Strawbridge, a point of entry 6-year-old Corelli at this point. Nice, $12 if you latched on in the Clark. And then came the 2-3-year-old win in your in races for the Black Eyed Susan and for the Preakness. Miss Leslie at a nice price, Claudio Gonzalez for BB Horses. Miss Leslie and ran a big race, overhauled Olivia of the Desert, who ran very well. Little Stitious, it's funny, she did not, you know, she was not involved early, and I didn't watch a replay, so I don't know if she had a little trouble getting out of the gate or what, but she was a little further back, I think, probably than Tom Amos was hoping. But Miss Leslie, a painter bred by Maxis Stable, Miss Leslie wins and gets into the Black Eyed Susan, and Gonzalez said, "Why not?" Then came the Tessio, and you had the takedown in here, and the takedown. I commented. I usually don't get too involved in those discussions, but absolutely the right call here as Accelerator impeded the Reds. There wasn't any question, and the Reds gets elevated for John Kimmel and Flanagan Racing. This is a tonalist who broke his maiden going a mile and an eighth, then tried to cut back in the Gotham. Looks like this is a horse that really does want a route of ground. So nice. Wins the Tessio, and maybe we'll catch up with John Kimmel middle of next week after the Derby dust settles. And then Completed Pass wins the King Leatherberry up close. Nice Angel Cruz ride, this for Gonzalez as well. And Bob Bone, a Indiana bred, actually, Swifty Farms, who we've talked about before as part of the Indiana coverage. And a quick rundown, too, of Golden Gate. You had Altea win the Golden Poppy. That was Michael McCarthy from My Racehorse. And how about the Cal Derby, Stalking Shadow? Jonathan Wong actually watched this with Gary Young, I think. Yeah, was this the race we watched with Gary? Stalking Shadow, Evan Wrong, Tommy Town. This is one of their homebreds by Minister's Wildcat. And won the Cal Derby. Then the Mile and Whisper Not. Baltus, and it just seems, as we've been saying for weeks, since the start of the year, if it's not Baltus, it's Phil D'Amato. If it's not Phil D'Amato, it's Baltus. Whisper Not is a Poet's Voice colt that has, you know, not missed a board yet. That included in the Mathers Brother Mile at the opening day at Santa Anita. So this is a nice horse, Whisper Not, and got a 95 buyer, so keep an eye out. Pizzazz won the Cal Oaks, and here's Richard Mandela. Again, Mandela very quietly tearing it up, winning stakes all over the place. And then you had the Camilla Urso, Gypsy Spirit, Leonard Powell for Red Baron's Barn and Rancho Temescal, who do such a good job. And Any Port in a Storm, as I mentioned, the Peter Miller for Peter Redekop won the Lost in the Fog with Roman. Evan Roman and Kyle Fry and who else? Fry won a couple of stakes, three stakes, actually. So that was a very nice card that they had at Golden Gate. And the Santa Margarita I haven't mentioned, Baffert and Smith, As Time Goes By. Nothing wrong with her. Brando the Bartender for Craig DeLazzi with Umberto Rispoli won the Crystal Water, and Rispoli and Sadler won another stake. Last week it was the Misdirection, and Sunday it was the Singletary. I think that's it. I think you're caught up. Oh, and I didn't. I'll save the. I haven't done the Fonner Park number, but the Fonner Park action. I think we're. Well, we're close. They're talking to Brad Cox. What's he going to say? They're doing terrible. I wish the race was in 2 weeks. No, right? That's the other side. I'll wait till they go to the podium, Case. I'll give you a quick rundown then on the Fonner sequence, and you know, a lot of the ones we talked about. Got it done, including in the opening leg, Stetson Mitchell with that proudly fought, who was 6-5. Then you had the even money shot, Alex of Ice win for Kelly Martinez. You had a bit of a price that Mr. Mike won the third leg, the candy ride for Joe Hawley. That was, you know, the first somewhat tricky horse, you know, probably a B on a lot of tickets. Then came, you know, the upset, and I didn't. As I said with Ed, I thought that singling Sleepy Eyes Todd, or at least not having backups, was a mistake. And he was dull as can be and ended up third. I hope that Miguel Silva, you know, backs off of him a little bit. I understand, you know, trying to go back to defend the title, but it was Momosa under Arnaldo Martinez at just under 5-1. And that was key. You needed, you know, so there were two somewhat tricky horses. And then you had another 5-6-1 shot win the nightcap, that Winter's Run. And you ended up getting paid. I $3,540 in the force out. And what was the final pool, actually? I didn't notice. $567,000. So good job. Good job by everybody. And thanks again to Chris Katulak. It is 11, and they're still kind of milling a little bit. There we go. There's Bucky. All right, Case, I see
Bucky with...
trumpet in hand. And here we go. I think we're
set. I think they're getting a little underestimated.
Bring up the little volume.
Because they were upset winners. I think Todd Pletcher has both of them peaking at the right time. They're going to need to take a step forward. They're going to need to get the right trip from off the pace. But I give them both bigger shots than maybe others do.
Yeah, slow edition of the Wood Memorial this year. Bourbonic, a big long shot, a former $50,000 maiden claimer. Dynamic won $725,000 buy. Certainly looks the part on the track.
Yeah, Bourbonic. Reminds me a little bit of Charismatic, who also had the drop to the maiden claiming level to break his maiden and eventually won the Kentucky Derby. Dynamic won only one win, but he's meant to be good. They spent a lot of money.
That was me
that brought it up.
The Kentucky Derby draw now just moments away. Waiting in the wings is the voice of Churchill Downs, Travis Stone.
There we go.
First, the incomparable Steve Buttleman with the call to post for the post position draw.
Steve. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the draw for the 147th Kentucky Derby taking place this Saturday here at Churchill Downs. It's great to feel the energy in the room, particularly as we welcome back the Derby to springtime and to see all the connections here today as we get to set the draw this year's race. 20 horses have entered the Derby. We'll draw all 20 post positions here this morning. First off, a couple of introductions. Behind me, to my left, your right, Barbara Borden is the chief steward for the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission. She started in racing back in 1976 and started here at the Derby in 2012. Next to her is Mike Anderson, a Louisville native and the new president of Churchill Downs. He was named the 14th president last year. Thus, this will be his first Derby in that role. Next to Mike is Laurel Durham. Corporate Counsel for Churchill Downs Incorporated is here to oversee the proceedings. At the table in front, Ben Huffman, Vice President of Racing for Churchill Downs. He's a Louisville native that graduated from Western Kentucky University, and when not filling races in Kentucky, he's at his home in Crestwood, Kentucky, taking care of two off-the-track thoroughbreds, but his daughters tell us they're angling for more. Dan Bork, originally from Philadelphia, has done everything at the racetrack from paddock judge to entry clerk to his current role as stakes coordinator and assistant racing secretary
track thoroughbreds,
here
but his
at
daughters
Churchill.
Tell us
and finally, to hang the
more.
Silks,
Dan Bork,
Alex Frankie from Lexington,
from Philadelphia,
the reigning
has done everything at
Miss
the racetrack,
Kentucky.
From paddock judge to entry
with that,
clerk,
let's get ready to draw the Derby.
Coordinator and assistant racing secretary here at Churchill. And
the way this works is Ben has an entry sheet, Dan has a pill. The entry sheet is matched
Miss
up
Kentucky.
To the pill, and
with
that will be the post position.
Draw
we'll draw 10 post positions at first. Take a little break and draw the second 10 after that. And with that, gentlemen, let's go.
I've had the audio coming from here, Steve.
Number 20.
20.
I don't need the mic on your end.
Todd Pletcher, Kendrick Carmouche.
Number 20, Bourbonic. This is Kendrick Carmouche, a Louisiana native. This is his first mount in the Kentucky Derby, and he said he's going to try and treat it like every other race, although he admits he's quite pumped up. The Derby's a dream come true on many levels for him. This is the fifth time that Todd Pletcher
no
will start four horses in the Derby.
No
one
harm.
Of those times he did that, he won it with Super Saver in 2010. Bourbonic, number 20.
Thirteen, Hidden Stash, Vicky Oliver, Rafael Bejarano.
Number 13, Hidden Stash, Rafael Bejarano returning to the Derby. He has not rode in the Derby the last few years. He ran fourth in 2009. Vicky Oliver trying to become the first female to win the Kentucky Derby. Hidden Stash, 13.
15,
Rock Your World, John Sadler, Joel Rosario.
Number 15 is Rock Your World. The figures to be one of the shorter prices in this year's Kentucky Derby. Rosario, of course, won the Kentucky Derby with Orr back in 2013. This is the fifth Kentucky Derby starter for John Sadler. The Santa Anita Derby has proven to be a good prep race for the Kentucky Derby with three winners from the last 10 years. Rock Your World at the sale when he was purchased had the perfect balance for a classic distance horse. That's Rock Your World, number 15.
Number
three, Brooklyn Strong, Danny Velasquez, Humberto Rispoli.
Number three is Brooklyn Strong, who actually beat Known Agenda, who figures to be one of the favorites in this year's Kentucky Derby, in the Remsen last year. The last time the Remsen winner came on to win the Kentucky Derby was 1995 with Thunder Gulch. This is the first Derby mount for Umberto Rispoli and trainer Danny Velasquez. Brooklyn Strong, number three.
Number two.
Two, Like the King, Wesley Ward, Drayden Van Dyke.
Number two is Like the King, Drayden Van Dyke, who moved his tack here to Kentucky last year. Two horses have won the Kentucky Derby coming out of the Jeff Ruby Stakes, Lily Teen of Animal Kingdom most recently. This is Wesley Ward, who's won races all around the world, believe it or not, his first Kentucky Derby starter, Like the King, number two.
Number 10.
10, Midnight Bourbon, Steve Asmussen, Mike Smith.
Number 10 is Midnight Bourbon for the all-time leading trainer here at Churchill Downs, Steve Asmussen. He said earlier this week that he believes Midnight Bourbon's time is coming. He's a big horse that stands more than 16 hands tall, and he became a bit of an internet sensation when he got loose this week on the backside. Midnight Bourbon is feeling good this week, number 10 in the Kentucky Derby.
Number 8.
8, Medina Spirit, Bob Baffert, John Velasquez.
Number 8 is Medina Spirit. Medina is actually the second holiest city in the Islamic faith. It's the same trainer and jockey combination that won last year's Kentucky Derby. And, of course, between them, they have 9 Kentucky Derby wins. Johnny Velasquez with 3. Baffert, all-time leading, tied for that with 6. That is Medina Spirit, number 8.
Number 4.
4, Keep Me in Mind, Robertino Diodoro, David Cohen.
Number 4 is Keep Me in Mind, who won the Kentucky Jockey Club last Thanksgiving weekend here at Churchill Downs. Super saved the last horse to win the Kentucky Jockey Club before going on to win the Kentucky Derby. This is the first starter for both jockey David Cohen and Robertino Diodoro. Keep Me in Mind is number 4.
Number 18.
18, Superstock, Steve Asmussen, Ricardo Santana.
Number 18 is Superstock, a true family affair with Steve's dad owning part of Superstock and his son having been a rider in Superstock's early part of his career. Steve Asmussen said this week to TwinSpires.com that this is a horse that can get position and switch things off, which he believes will be critical in a race like the Kentucky Derby. That is Superstock number 18.
Number 11.
11, Dynamic One, Todd Pletcher, Jose Ortiz.
Number 11, Dynamic One for Todd Pletcher and jockey Jose Ortiz, Eclipse Award-winning jockey Jose Ortiz, who last year took a picture of the Derby winner's circle when he was at Churchill Downs with the caption, "One Day." Jose Ortiz has had 6 prior mounts to the Kentucky Derby with a 2nd and a 3rd. He will see if he can get that one-day win with Dynamic One this weekend. Number 11, Dynamic One in the Derby. That's the first 10. We'll take a brief break and come back and draw the second 10 halfway home at the post draw.
Ten down, 10 to go in the Kentucky Derby post position draw. Scott, Rock Your World drawing post position number 15. 2 horses so far drawn outside of him. Obviously, he wants the other horses with natural speed to be drawn inside.
Draw in the 1 through 10 so far, and 5 distributed in the 11 through 20, which is interesting the way it's kind of balanced around. The one hole still waiting in terms of problematic, and it's funny, Andy, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, Andy Serling made a point, regarding the new gate, and a member of the gate crew actually responded that, the footage, the extra footage that's been saved by having the new 20 horse gate, and how much room by moving it to the left, basically, have they been able to save? And so it is true that the one hole no longer opens inside the curve of the inner rail. So the horse in the one hole no longer has as much of an issue getting out of the gate and finding a safe haven along the rail, because if you were starting below You know, and that opening, you know, horses will run to open space. So the opening, you know, is always problematic. And then all of a sudden, here's, you know, 19 horses that are coming down toward the horses on the inside. And that's where, you know, historically, that's where the trouble of the inside post happened. But it's going to be less of an issue than it used to be. We can get used to that. The most important thing that's happened here so far is Medina Spirit drawing inside of Rock Your World. And I jumped in and said that the 15 was a advantageous spot for Joel, not for Joel, for Flavian Pratt to, you know, to operate. Is it, no. How am I forgetting? It is Joel. Yeah, that's right. I've been conflating Hot Rod Charlie and Rock Your World of the last couple of days. Let's go back up to the podium.
Five, Saint Hood, Todd Pletcher, Corey Lannery.
After
number five is Saint Hood, Corey Lannery, known around these parts for loving the rail here at Churchill Downs. This is one of four horses for Todd Pletcher in the race. Of all the horses coming into this year's Kentucky Derby, Saint Hood had by far the worst trip in his prep, and he still managed to get up for second. Saint Hood, number five.
Number nine.
Hot Rod Charlie. Yeah! Doug O'Neill, Flavian Pratt.
Apparently, number nine is lucky number for Hot Rod Charlie. Doug O'Neill, the trainer, is a two-time Kentucky Derby winning trainer. Pratt, who's going to ride Hot Rod Charlie, rode Country House in 2019. When they were naming this horse, they tried to find something that was catchy and decided to use the phrase Hot Rod in front of the dam sire Indian Charlie, and that's how they came up with Hot Rod Charlie, number nine.
Number 12.
12, Helium, Mark Cassie, Julie LaPerouse.
Number 12, Helium, is one of two horses for Mark Cassie in this year's Kentucky Derby. Helium is undefeated in all three starts. Around the barn, Helium is a laid-back horse that only gets worked up when it's time to eat, and he has never missed a meal. That's Helium, the Tampa Bay Derby winner, number 12 for this year's Derby.
Nineteen,
Soup and Sandwich, Mark Cassie, Tyler Gaffleon.
Soup and Sandwich, the other starter for trainer Mark Cassie, is the fifth starter in the Kentucky Derby for Live Oak. They finished second back in 1982 with a horse named Laser Light. Mark Cassie has eight prior starts in the Derby, ran fourth with Classic Empire. Soup and Sandwich is a big, strong-feeling colt that is a mixture of what they call around the barn Class Clown and D1 Quarterback. That's Soup and Sandwich, number 19.
Number seven.
Seven, Mandaloon, Brad Cox, Florent Giroux.
Number seven is Mandaloon for Brad Cox and Florent Giroux. This is Judmon's sixth starter. Florent Giroux is going to ride, known around here as Flo. Brad Cox, of course, a Louisville native. He joins Alan Jerkins as one of the only two trainers in the history of horse racing that won an Eclipse Award before having their first Kentucky Derby starter. Mandaloon is one of Brad's first Kentucky Derby starters.
Seventeen,
highly motivated, Chad Brown, Javier Castellano.
Number 17, highly motivated for Chad Brown. This is his sixth Kentucky Derby starter. He ran second with Good Magic back in 2018. Highly motivated is owned by Eclipse Award-winning Clarvitz Stables, who named the horse after the dam Strong Incentive, because if you have Strong Incentive, you are highly motivated. Highly motivated, number 17.
Number six.
Six, Obesos, Greg Foley, Marcelino Pedroza.
Number six, Obesos, is truly a Kentucky horse with Oldham County's Team Foley. Owner and breeder, Barrett Bernard, who owns part of the horse as well, let his son Brian name Obesos, and it came from the sire Orb for the O and the dam Snubs and Kisses. Bezos means kisses in Spanish. Travis Foley, Greg Foley's son, said he's a smart horse and not much bothers him. That's Obesos, number six.
Number one.
One, Known Agenda, Todd Pletcher, Irad Ortiz.
Number one is Known Agenda for Todd Pletcher and Irad Ortiz. Known Agenda exits the Florida Derby, the same race that Always Dreaming used to win the Kentucky Derby for these same connections. It's the most productive prep in history, 24 winners coming out of that race. Three-time Eclipse Award winning jockey Irad Ortiz This is his fifth Derby mount, and he'll have to do it from post one with known agenda.
14.
14. Essential quality, Brad Cox, Louis Saez.
Essential quality, who figures to be the morning line favorite. We'll find out here momentarily. Won his first race on Derby Day last year in September. His sire, Tappet, one of the top sires in North America, seeking his first Kentucky Derby winner. He was last year's two-year-old champion. Two-year-old champions are 21 for 79 in the Kentucky Derby. The last to do it was Nyquist, 2016. Essential quality, number 14.
16.
16, King Fury, Kenny McPeak, Brian Hernandez.
King Fury will be the
King
16.
Fury, number 16 for this year's Derby. This is Brian Hernandez's third Kentucky Derby mount. He's said that King Fury showed a lot as a two-year-old, but has really developed into his three-year-old season. They're hoping to sit back and make one run. Trainer Kenny McPeak named King Fury after the two-time world heavyweight champion Tyson Fury. King Fury, number 16 for this year's Kentucky Derby. And that should be all 20. We'll take another brief break and we'll be back with the morning line odds for the 147th Derby back after this.
I'm not on my phone right now
go.
Or on my
Your
computer, but I got a feeling Twitter's
set. And a few notable things. First of all, the obligatory, highly motivated drawing, the 17. Nobody that has worn the 17 has won, but a horse has left the 17 berth and won, and that, of course, American Pharoah. But a couple of things. With Super and Sandwich drawing the 19, highly motivated the 17, and Rock Your World the 15, those are three speeds that line up in proximity outside. And so that actually is maybe a something of a positive, but clearly Rock Your World is going to be your pace setter from that slot. Highly motivated can set up shop. Soup and Sandwich can probably float and stalk, which I think is what they want. And in a lot of ways, this draw ends up solving what was a concern, I think, for the team at Zidane. They were worried that they were going to have to, take on the role of pace pressure on Rock Your World, but they may not have to now. And I think their hope was that Caddo River and Rock Your World would spar and that they could then get set up shop behind them. Well, that actually is going to work in a different way, I think, with Rock Your World setting out and highly motivated lapping on and Soup and Sandwich further as well. So this ends up being advantageous, I think, for at first, depending on who else was going to be distributed in terms of pace horses. I thought, at the break after the 10 that it was problematic for Medina Spirit, but I think things worked out all right for him. Let's go back to Travis Stone and let's get the morning line odds.
.com and created by Mike Battaglia, who's been doing it for decades. We checked with Mike at the break. No changes from his original draft. So here we go with the morning line odds for the Kentucky Derby. We'll do this in alphabetical order for those of us using the draw sheet here in the room. So first off, we have Bourbonic at 30-1. Bourbonic is 30-1. Brooklyn Strong, 50-1. Brooklyn Strong is 50-1. Dynamic One is 20-1. Dynamic One, 20-1 for the Derby. Essential quality, the morning line favorite for this year's Kentucky Derby is 2-1. 2-1 on essential quality. Helium and Hidden Stash are both 50-1. 50-1 on Helium, 50-1 on Hidden Stash. Highly Motivated is 10-1. Highly Motivated, 10-1. Hot Rod Charlie, 8-1. Hot Rod Charlie is 8-1. Keep Me in Mind, blinkers off there, 50-1. Keep Me in Mind is 50-1. King Fury is 20-1. 20-1 on King Fury. 6-1 on Known Agenda. Known Agenda, 6-1 from the rail. Like the King is 50-1. 50-1 on Like the King. 15-1 on both Mandaloon and Medina Spirit. Mandaloon 15, Medina Spirit 15. Midnight Bourbon and Obezos, both at 20. Midnight Bourbon 20-1, Obezos 20-1. Rock Your World, 5-1. 5-1 on Rock Your World. Sainthood 50, 50-1 on Sainthood, and 30-1 on both Soup and Sandwich and Superstock. 30-1 on Soup and Sandwich and Superstock. So once again, Essential Quality, the 2-1 morning line favorite. Rock Your World at 5-1, Known Agenda 6, and Hot Rod Charlie 8-1, the top four. That'll conclude the post position draw for this year's Kentucky Derby. It's race 12 of 14 on Saturday, post time approximately 6:57, $3 million, and history on the line. Thanks for joining us, everybody, this morning. Best of luck, Derby Week, and enjoy the 147th Derby on Saturday. Have a good day.
There you go, and nice job, as always, by Travis Stone, who for the foreseeable future will be hosting these Derby draws and calling the race. And we can lay it out for you. Casey, give Nick Tamaro a call. Nick is going to join us for an instant read, so we'll get Nick on here right away, and I'll run it down for those that were trying to jot the field and the odds. Here it is. I'll go, you know, fairly slowly for you. The one, Known Agenda, and I can't imagine Todd Pletcher is thrilled with this. In fact, you know, Sainthood draws the five. If he could flip-flop those, I'm sure he'd be thrilled to for Corey Lannery. Corey Lannery will still get a ground-saving trip, but Known Agenda from down inside, that's not ideal. But Arad, you know, you're in good hands, and it looks like you should have a little bit of room to operate early to find some position. 6-1, third choice on Known Agenda, and actually here's the full screen. Let me actually capture this, too, while I got a chance with the odds. There we go. All right. Just in time, too. It didn't last too long on the screen. The two-hole, like the King, for Wesley Ward, 50-1, unlike the King, DVD, Drayden Van Dyke. Aboard Brooklyn Strong, late comer into the race, and here's one of the up and down stories of the Derby when it comes to Umberto Rispoli, 50-1 on Brooklyn Strong from the 3, the 4. Keep Me in Mind, and I'll reiterate what I said to Mike Welch. Keep Me in Mind looks awfully sprightly out there. 50-1 for the Diodoro Davy Cone run, and of course runner, and of course the two of them together in the Oaks as well with Ava's Grace. And Keep Me in Mind from the 4, 50-1. Sainthood, Corey Lannery, 50-1 from the 5 hole. Obezos, 20-1, and kind of an aggressive pricing from Mike Battaglia. And Obezos from the 6, with Marcelino Pedroza, the 7, Mandaloon, 15-1 for Brad Cox, and Mandaloon and Florent Giroux, Flo the Jock on your Twitter, 15-1 from the 7 hole. Medina Spirit, as mentioned earlier, Medina Spirit with Johnny V, 15-1. From the 8, Hot Rod Charlie, 8-1, basically your fourth choice after Rock Your World, Known Agenda, and Essential Quality. Hot Rod Charlie, 8-1, and Flavian Pratt aboard from the 9 on Hot Rod Charlie, Doug O'Neill. Midnight Bourbon, 10 for Ron Winchell, 20-1, and Mike Smith. Second half of the field, Dynamic One, 20-1, and Dynamic One making a good daily impression. Jose Ortiz from the 11, the 12, Helium for DJ Stable for the Greens, 50-1 on Helium. Julian Leparue, Hidden Stash, your 13 for Vicky Oliver, and 13 hole here for Hidden Stash. Rafael Bejarano back in the Derby. And Essential Quality, your 2-1 favorite from the 14. for Luis Saez. Rock Your World from the 15. Rock Your World, Joel Rosario, second choice. King Fury, 16. Kenny McPeak, 20-1. King Fury, Brian Hernandez Jr., certainly knows his way around this oval. 17, highly motivated for Chad Brown and Seth Klarman, and highly motivated Javier Castellano and Superstock, 30-1, 10-1, by the way, on highly motivated. 30-1 Superstock from the 18. Superstock and Rafael Santana Jr. and Soup and Sandwich, the widest of the speed horses, 30-1 for Mrs. Weber and Mark Cassie. Soup and Sandwich, Tyler Gaffleone, and the 20, Bourbonic, Kendrick Carmouche, 30-1 from the 20. There's your field for those of you that I hope filled in any blanks that we're missing, and we'll fill in some blanks about this draw and what it says early with Nick Tamaro, who joins us now. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. The day is, the morning is just whistled by, which we kind of expected. And once we break at noon and once the rest of this Saturday card is drawn and the PPs, yesterday they came out right on time, actually, probably about 5 o'clock. And we'll be able to really start to dig in. Some initial feel, Nick, for beneficiaries and what the way this field of 20 lining up tells us.
I mean, nothing creates forced theater like post position draws in horse racing, right? And there actually was a dramatic moment, I guess, when there were three horses left that didn't have post positions, and they were the 1, 14, and 16, and it was a matter of whether Known Agenda, Essential Quality, or King Fury would get the one. It ended up being Known Agenda. I'm not a particularly big Known Agenda fan. I know with the 20 stall gate, it is not the problematic outpost that it was before. But, I don't figure Known Agenda much into the decision here. I think he's a horse that, even though some of his workouts really haven't looked that great to me, I think he's a horse who got good in Florida. I generally try and bet against these types. So he made out poorly. Everybody else seemed to have made out absolutely fine. I believe that Rock Your World's connections probably would have preferred him being outside. So he got to the right place, and you have the main speed horses gapped out a few stalls in the field. And, generally that makes for a pretty honestly run race, I would think.
Talk about something that I was only had added privy regarding Medina Spirit because I happened to have been with Gary Young on Saturday morning when word came about Caddo River, and he had to get right on the phone to Mr. Zidane, and we had talked earlier about, their ideal scenario and what they were hoping for was a Rock Your World, Caddo River sparring match, or at least, keeping each other, honest one way or the other so that they could maybe set up shop third. I think they basically can revert now to that strategy given that there's two pace presence that are outside Rock Your World. I mean, highly motivated in Soup and Sandwich, aren't they, the three of them, going to go forward and kind of, line up in a phalanx?
Well, I mean, my opinion is that Medina Spirit's going to go. I mean, barring any kind of tactical change from the connections, I think that he has one shot in this race, and that's to go. I mean, and I should say, I don't think that's going to happen because I don't really have any knowledge specifically of what intent might be, but to me, Medina Spirit's one chance to win this race is to just go, try and bottom everybody out. You have one of the most gifted front-end riders in the history of the game, obviously one of the best trainers in the history of the game, probably the best dirt trainer of this generation by far. You just try and win the race in the first couple of furlongs, in my opinion, because I think that Rock Your World's connections actually want to stalk. I don't think they want to go. Joel Rosario, for all the talent that he has, we talked about this a little bit on Friday, he's really at his best when he gets a horse to relax a little bit off the pace. So I think that's one of the things. I think three things will happen out of the gate. I think that depending on what the plan is for Johnny Velasquez, he's going to take a look to his left and see what Lannery does on Sainthood. And if Sainthood is ridden aggressively, then that might be the key to what happens, because Sainthood is quick enough to get towards the front. He might not necessarily be quick enough to outsprint these horses, but if they want to ride with intent and they want to put Sainthood on the lead, that's going to give everybody else the opportunity to stalk. Then you have that grouping of Hot Rod Charlie, Medina Spirit, Soup and Sandwich, Rock Your World. All of those horses are forwardly placed, and you get what that really does is it creates a high pressure race, and it doesn't necessarily become a fast pace, but it's a high pressure race in the sense that everybody is forward on a pretty strong gallop, and that's going to ensure what I would say is an honest result, because nobody's going to be compromised, even necessarily the speed horses. I think being where he drew, and one of the things that's kind of throwing people off as far as the pace mapping of this race goes, Highly Motivated's not going to the lead. Highly Motivated went to the lead in the Bluegrass because there was absolutely no speed on paper. He was stretching out. I think he is absolutely going to settle and make one run. I think they want to get him a similar trip, even though it's very hard to simulate what happens at 6 or 7 furlongs around two turns. I think they want him to be in kind of a mid-pack spot, let everybody else battle, and hope that you can start picking up pieces around the 3/8 pole. So if you're planning on him, you know, I always divide it E, P, 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 and S as far as assigning potential pace interests of horses. He's going to be more of a PP/P to me. I think he's going to be sitting a little bit off of it and making that one run. I don't think he's going to necessarily go forward right out of the gate.
Interesting. I'll be anxious to see what the pace, you know, how I haven't looked back at the pace projector on Timeform US since the, you know, some of the field changes. Should also mention that I didn't, Dale Romans did not AE enter with Sitting on Go. I guess they would have only entered if he made the body of the race. So if anything goes wrong between now and Saturday, that's how many horses we'll end up with. Otherwise, you know, Bourbonic in the 20, big deal. He's going to want to, you know, make a way to the, you know, the inside as they pass the stands. Trying to look at and project, you know, who's been kind of aggressive and on their toes. King Fury actually is a horse that, you know, and he's important, I guess, you know, being right next door to Rock Your World. I'll be anxious. What do you make of how McPeak approaches it with him?
I mean, there's just a big part of me that can't overcome the fact that a horse making the Kentucky Derby as their second start of their three-year-old season, especially off of 3 weeks rest, just seems to be way too much. I think King Fury's form is sort of seducing a lot of the public because he looks like he has the right kind of running style. Looks like he might be able to get a pretty, you know, pretty nice pace set up, and he ran well in the Lexington. Of course, he got a really good setup. That's it. He got a phenomenal ride. I think the one thing you can count on with him is that Brian Hernandez Jr. is going to save ground, and that's always a good thing when you're willing to roll the dice a little bit on it. I think it's going to be, things should set up well for him. I just feel like if there are big opportunities for King Fury, they're down the line. I think this is just a little bit too much too soon, but I will say that I think he's a horse that certainly has no shortage of talent, and he showed that winning the way he did off the layoff.
And he's kind of a mid-pack type.
He probably becomes more of a closing type in a race like this, just because
they'll run away from him
a little bit.
Yeah.
Right, but yeah, I mean, I think in the, you know, as we get a sense of who he is, maybe later on in his 3-year-old season and as a 4-year-old, I could certainly see him be more of a mid-pack stalking type.
Hidden Stash from off of it. Bourbonic Super Stock is probably in the last five. In fact, here I've got my old my original pace layout, Nick, that we worked off of last week. Let's do, and this is something we usually do. Let's walk through the field and lay them out. So you're projecting Medina in front.
Yeah, I think they learned a lesson in the Santa Anita Derby. And, I mean, they could easily try and stalk again. And, you know, like most horses, he's more effective when he's on the lead. I mean, I feel like I say this a lot, and people, I don't know, there are a couple of myths that go around racing nowadays, one of which is that some horses are better stalking. Like, no horses with speed are better stalking. Everybody needs to get off of that. No horses with speed are better stalking. They're all better on the lead. Everybody's better on the lead, especially when you can dictate to everybody else. So that's why I think they're going to take that approach. If Baffert is a guy, you know, Baffert, Dwayne Lucas, Nick Zito, through times, they've won big races because they put speed horses on the lead, right? So I just think that seems very, very basic to me, and I don't think they'll miss on that, because the risk that you run with that horse, if you let two or three horses that are breaking to your outside clear you, you're done. You're absolutely finished. If that horse is taken hurt by the stands the first time, he has no chance.
So that let me cross these off as we lay it out. Medina Spirit. Now, in the original graphing, we had Rock Your World more forward, obviously, and even potentially pace setting. Soup and Sandwich, Midnight Bourbon actually could go forward a little bit, right?
You would think so, yeah. I think three of the Louisiana Derby alums are interesting in terms of figuring out where they're going to end up early and how they're going to be ridden. And really, that's both Medina, Midnight Bourbon, and Hot Rod Charlie, the 1-2 finishers. And what about Mandaloon? I mean, everybody's going on and on about how great he's training. His best races have come when he's been forwardly placed. How can he not get aggressively ridden to an extent, right? I mean, especially if a horse immediately to his outside might be showing speed. And the other thing is that nobody to his inside is showing speed, save maybe Sainthood. Oh, Bezos, Keep Me in Mind, Brooklyn Strong, Like the King, Known Agenda. Those are all drop-back horses. So, I mean, with Mandaloon, you're either trying to show him some open space and going up and advancing, or you're in the same situation I just laid out with Medina Spirit, and you're taking dirt behind horses, and that just seems like a really negative trip for him.
So let's put Medina Spirit on the point, and Midnight Bourbon, Mandaloon, Hot Rod Charlie, and Rock Your World, basically the rest of the first quadrant.
Yeah, I think, and if you want to include Soup and Sandwich in that, I think Soup and Sandwich grew very favorably. Right, so he's going to be able to, you know, he's at least going to be outside in the clear stalking it. But, yeah, I would put him in the first quadrant as well.
Yeah, and that's actually a scenario that Gaffleon is good with. Nice. All right, so there's six. We look to the middle portion, and that's where Highly Motivated, maybe a little Like the King, Essential. Where's Essential Quality at that point? He's got to be probably right in that 7, 8, 9 range, no?
Yeah, I think you'd put him in a second grouping, probably no more than, you know, 5, 6 lengths out. Hopefully for his sake, given the way he's run well in the past, he's going to be outside, which, you know, you think he probably should be. One of the things, he sort of gets the opposite of what's going to go on, or similar actually to what I just laid out with Mandaloon, is that, you know, Sias is going to look to his right when they get half a furlong out of the gate and realize that the only horses that showed speed are going to probably be in front of them. So he's going to get that good trip stalking outside that he likes, probably, you know, like we said, 5, 6 lengths off of it. And I would put him in a grouping with the horses you just laid out. Now the mid-pack types, Helium, Highly Motivated, Dynamic One, Like the King, probably. I would imagine that Irad might try and get Known Agenda to more of that kind of spot. The Known Agenda, it would be unfair to be dismissive of him because he's inside. He's run well inside in the past, but he's going to have to be used a lot more in the first quarter mile to hold that position than he probably would have preferred to be. But I think you can probably include him in that group. And it really, at that point, becomes like more of a three-tiered group of horses, because everybody else is kind of a one-run closer.
Yes.
You know, the variables there are King Fury, who we talked about maybe being, you know, a little bit more of a sustained off-the-pace type. Hidden Stash is probably going to be in that range as well. But, you know, I think Superstock is going to be similarly positioned to Essential Quality, because even though Superstock won the Arkansas Derby from off-the-pace, he's actually never that far away from it.
Right.
And he got a, you know, using Time From U.S., using the pace figures, he had a Time From U.S. pace figure line that actually puts him in the definitely in the front half of the field, if not the first quarter of the field. So he's going to be I'd figure him to be, you know, not forwardly placed. He's not going to be that far out of it. But, you know, keep me in mind, Obezos, Bourbonic, these are the horses that are going to be coming from way out of it. And they're going to be, you know, they're going to be out the back at the start and then having to not only negotiate some traffic, but hopefully for their sake, some pace in front of them.
12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. I'm missing, who am I missing? 10.
Did we talk about Helium?
We did. We put Helium in that second, middle third.
Second, third, yeah.
That,
tier. Yeah.
That I'm missing.
Brooklyn Strong.
Which, with good reason, because it is, you know, you talk about jumping into the quarter pole. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
What do we do with him?
I mean, I would imagine he's going to be coming from pretty well off of it being drawn inside. I wouldn't expect him to be really in the first half of the field, even though we really don't even know what Brooklyn Strong's preferred running style is. You know, we've seen so little of him in the last 6 months, and going back to the Remsen, when, you know, it was a small field and a sloppy track, so he probably ran a race that isn't necessarily indicative of what his preferred style is. But, yeah, I would imagine he's going to be coming from a good bit off of it.
Well, and then Sainthood is the missing link.
Yes, I think Sainthood's going to be forwardly placed. I think they sacrifice a great deal by not using some speed out of the gate. Now, the difference is that, as I've said now, for Medina Spirit and for Known Agenda and Mandaloon, do you want your horse sort of in behind horses taking dirt towards the rail? Well, that's exactly what Lannery wants, right? So he's probably going to be totally comfortable with if there are enough horses around him sending when they come out of the gate, he will gladly let them clear him and then just try and attach his horse to the inside and ride that rail as long as he can, which would be no great surprise. But I feel like if you're going to ride Sainthood to really try and get a piece of this thing, you have to use his speed.
Well, here's basically how it lined up then. And this is Nick's pace view with Medina Spirit leading and in pursuit, Midnight Bourbon, Mandaloon, Hot Rod Charlie, Rock Your World, and Soup and Sandwich, some agglomeration of those five. So there's, you know, there's six of the field. And then in that stalky position, little bit further back than Oppressor, Sainthood, Highly Motivated, Essential Quality, Known Agenda, and Helium. Those five?
Yep. Exactly.
And then we can look to probably Dynamic One, Like the King, Super Stock in there, and maybe Hidden Stash, and then the deep closers, Brooklyn Strong, Bourbonic, Keep Me in Mind, and Obezos.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how it lines up. Yeah. You know, not that anybody was compromised. You know, maybe aside a little bit from Known Agenda, but again, you don't want to make the rail draw feel like the death sentence that it was before. I think everybody's had the memories of looking at Lucky in their mind for quite some time, but it's not nearly that much of a problem. But obviously, it's less than ideal. And Todd Pletcher's a guy that trains his horses to be most comfortable stalking on the outside. I mean, the most interesting thing to me, not because it's terribly surprising, but I mean, I guess Mike Battaglia is sort of compensating for the fact that Mattress Mack may make a gigantic bet on Essential Quality, because who in their right mind thought he was going to be 2-1 on the morning line?
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, he does not look like a 2-1 shot in this race whatsoever. There are a couple of other lines that, you know, I would have made differently. I don't like to spend an extensive amount of time mocking morning line makers, and this is obviously one of the toughest races in the world to make a morning line for. But, I mean, he's clearly trying to make up for that, because, you know, if we're talking about a seven-figure win bet in the $3 to $4 million range, I mean, for everybody out there who's heard that he might do this, let me make sure you understand what a $3 to $4 million bet does in a pool like the Kentucky Derby win pool. The Kentucky Derby win pool in 2019 was about $48 million. So if he were to bet $3 million on Essential Quality, if Essential Quality was 4-1, he would go to 3. Now the impact wouldn't be quite as big. If he was 3-1, he would go down to about 220. But you can count on him adjusting those odds with that size bet by a point to a point and a half. So there are a ton of factors, one of which is when the bet is made. If the bet is made on Friday early in the day, then there's 24 hours to normalize. But you can guarantee yourself if the bet is made on Friday early in the day, he's going to be 1-9 when we go to bed Friday night. Mm-hmm. Because there's not going to be enough money in the pool to adjust by that point. It's going to be take quite some time. So it's that's what it boils down to. And I think that, that Mike Battaglia tried to compensate for that, which is an intelligent thing to do. Because obviously this will be a pool that's affected unlike any we've seen by one specific wager. And you know, it would be – he could obviously place it at any point in time. It would be particularly – I don't know if ironic is the right word. It would sort of be – it would be comical – if he placed it when they were in the post parade, because you could see essential quality at 7-2 suddenly go down to 2-1, and that's exactly what would happen basically by 2019 standards. So it will undoubtedly create an opportunity that, from a wagering perspective, that will be interesting for a lot of people, both for him and other essential quality backers that are now potentially going to have to take a shorter price in the win pool than they wanted. And it's also going to make everybody who wanted to bet anybody else to win happy, right? Because they're going to have an opportunity to get a price on a horse that they did not anticipate.
Exactly. Exactly. And there might be some overcompensation as well. The people that, you know, were anybody that was wavering regarding known agenda, this might, you know, the one hole mentally might inhibit, you know, their going with him and that kind of thing. I mean, there is some irrational reaction to this invariably. I'll say this. It feels like Battaglia also keeps close tabs on the Moto horses, you know, to make Obesos 20-1.
Yeah, I actually think that's a little cute on his part. Mm-hmm. I think the workouts are certainly not esoteric in anymore. You know, they're so well publicized by you and a lot of other people who observe them on a regular basis prior to the Kentucky Derby. But that's making him 20 and Mandaloon feels like a little bit of inside baseball. If you look at the PPs for horses like Mandaloon and Highly Motivated, they're not supposed to be 10 and 15-1. One is supposed to be 10-1, the other is supposed to be 20 or 30-1. So it's just a matter of whether you're going to give Mandaloon an excuse for his last race. I mean, maybe a little bit of the support that West Point generally puts in for their horses is built into it. But again, I mean, this is the Kentucky Derby. So unless you're making a Mattress Mack style wager, the support that individual connections give doesn't really have the same impact. But I mean, Obesos almost becomes. He really is completely unappealing at 20-1. He's supposed to be a bigger price than that. This is a horse that hasn't won a meaningful race and is like the ultimate clunk up type. And you're supposed to want 30 or more to one. And I think there are a lot of prices that are going to drift up from where they are. The other thing too is that, you know, the Derby, the Mind That Bird effect has had really taken hold for a long time, and nobody wants to miss a 50-1 shot. So I mean, there have been a number of years where the longest price was in the high 30s. So we'll see if that kind of spreads out a little bit of the betting. And obviously we've got more of an on-track crowd this year, certainly than last year. I mean, in terms of analyzing anything Derby-related, I took 2020 out. So it just doesn't – there's no way you can do it. You had a 3-5 favorite, which we'll not see on a Derby on the first Saturday in May, I think, for quite a while.
Field of 20 set, and the rest of the card will be put together the morning turns into the afternoon. Just got about 5-6 minutes left, Nick. Let me get, in addition to what we just went over, let me get a, you know, and obviously, you know, you and I will do our usual Wednesday, Thursday analysis for Friday, Saturday. Some reaction to the Oaks field.
I think the Oaks is a terrific race. It's probably one of the most competitive runnings I think we've had in a while. You have a really evenly matched field, and you know, you look through it, and I think when I sort of first put together Oaks PPs a couple of weeks ago, I started looking through and realized, wow, I mean, there's nobody who stands out, and basically everybody who's a win candidate looks like a slightly different version of the same horse in terms of speed figures and the races they've been running and running styles. I'm very intrigued by the race overall. There are a handful of horses I'd like to look at in terms of potentially offering value. I think that Pauline's Pearl is one of them. I don't necessarily love that she drew the inside, but you know, she's going to be 20-1. roughly in that range. I think she should get a good trip all in all. I don't think the fantasy played out to be as weak as it looked on paper. It certainly looked like it was going to be a very difficult race to endorse. My big concern about the race, you know, my big problem in terms of handicapping it is that I feel like people kind of acknowledge Travel Column and Clairier early and have just kind of stuck to them. And I'm not exactly sure that either of them are particularly good. I think they've been beating up on each other and a lot of other really weak horses in Louisiana. And I don't think that any of them have taken, I don't think it's taken a big step forward. I don't know if they necessarily have the right running style. Travel Column is going to get pressed into stalking a much faster pace than she ever has before. Look, I mean, to me, when push comes to shove, Malathot is clearly the horse to beat. I think she's a horse with a lot of talent. I thought halfway down the backstretch of the Demoiselle that it had all been hype at that point. But once she got out in the clear, she became very comfortable. Her comeback race was very good. Obviously, with the fillies, you can see horses go second off a layoff in the Oaks. It's a little bit better situation going a mile and an eighth. So she's the horse to beat. I thought Search Results drew very well. I think the difference for Search Results now is that she's going to have to be closer to a faster pace and will probably lose a little bit more ground. But I don't think there's any concern with her coming from three or four lengths off of it. So I think that she'll give a good account of herself. And, yeah, I mean, I'm just going to look to try and get alive to horses like Pauline's Pearl and Search Results and Malathot. Well, I think that Malathot is the likeliest winner, and I think there are good kind of fool around underneath horses like Maracuja, who made a big improvement stretching out in distance. This was a horse who broke her maiden squarely against the grain of the racetrack on February 21st, ran very, very well, handled the 9 furlongs quite nicely in the Gazelle, really bred top and bottom for distance. So I'm not going to be surprised if she can kind of clunk along and get a piece. She's going to be a big price. And I mean, the only other horse that I would probably want to get alive to in multi-race bets is Crazy Beautiful, who I think has the right kind of running style, and obviously McPeak is particularly skilled in this division, so I would have no problem trying to find a way to include her.
I can tell you she's going to get a pace, and I'll tell you, she today, just watching her gallop, and then as it happens, after the session was over at 45, they put her up on the screen again, and I'm glad they did because she was on the far side, so, you know, and my eyes are useless. She is a sweet moving horse. And I get, you know, it's funny, there's two horses that I came here not having any interest or had any expectation to, you know, to respect and you know, potentially use, and that's Milfay and Crazy Beautiful, and both of them are tough to deny from an appearance standpoint. And I'm, you know, so I'm sure some people were put off when Milfay drew this 14 hole, and I've got two words for you: practical joke. All you have to do is go back to that and watch Rosario manage to find the two path from the rail, even from the 20 hole, and you'll feel pretty confident.
Yeah, I mean, right, and Joel, you trust in that kind of situation, and being outside is not necessarily the problem I think that some people would think, because you do have a decent enough run to the first turn. The problem with her is that it seems like as a three-year-old, she's lost any ability to have any tactical speed, which she had in three starts as a two-year-old. And that becomes a problem when you're outside too, right? Because you're going to have to get used a lot harder to get forwardly placed potentially in a fast-paced race. But, you know, you're definitely trusting Rosario in that scenario, and I think you could do a lot worse than to take that approach. You're going to get a big price on a horse that was pretty highly regarded coming into this year and just hasn't really had a whole lot get right. I'm never on the right side of Philmont. I don't ever get his horses right when I think they're on the way out, they jump up and run huge races, and when I'm relying on them, they Elate is pretty much the story of my life with Philmont. So I thought Elate was an absolute cinch three different times, and she found a way to lose every time. So I just don't. You know, I bet Ron Green probably 25 times, and the day I didn't, he won up the rail in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. So I could go on and on, but nobody wants to hear that. So, yeah, she's another one that's going to offer value. There's a ton of opportunities for that, I would say, from top to bottom. You know, you're talking about, you want to talk about an underneath type. I mean, a horse like Will Secret is going to be ridden for a minor placing.
Yep,
shouldn't she, you know? Dallas
I agree.
Try to get a piece of big races. And why couldn't she run third or so? I think it's very, very hard to make up significant ground at a mile and a 16th at Keeneland, and I thought they were probably a little aggressive taking her back in the Ashland. So, yeah, why not her at a price?
Well, we got so much to do, obviously, Nick. We got a lot of handicapping left. Thanks very much, though, for you know, the reset on how we expect them to line up. And we'll you know, put it together in written form, too, for everybody. And I'll put that out on the Twitter feed. Nick will be back on Wednesday. We'll do Thursday. We'll do the Friday card, and Friday we'll do the Saturday card. NTAM 1215. Nick, thanks so much.
You bet, Steve. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
Nick Tamaro. We've got literally just 90 seconds or so, and I was kind of stretching less than 90 because we were trying to get a hold of Jim Watkins, as I promised, because FanDuel/Fairmont Park opens this afternoon. Jim, good morning.
How are you, Steve? Good to see you. Good to talk to
Jim.
You.
I wanted to make sure people should be looking for FD, FanDuel, the rebranded. We'll do something next week with more details, but it seems like there's a nice future ahead.
Well, it certainly is. The future's bright. You know, we're still licking our wounds a little bit from the shutdown last year, the lost time, and from the COVID fallout. But, future's bright when things are looking up. The FanDuel Sportsbook and coming in, rebranding, bringing back the St. Louis Derby after many years' absence. And,
wow.
It's going to be great.
Oh, that's tremendous. I didn't look in detail at the card, but we'll convene again. I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware that it was opening day.
All right. We're looking forward to a real successful year, and thanks for following us, Steve, and we push it on the fans out there.
Absolutely. We'll get more from Jim Watkins, of course, the Southern Illinois HBPA and Fairmont Park rebranded, FanDuel all in on remaking the Collinsville Oval. This was obviously a breakneck pace today, and the next 9 hours will be devoted to Oaks and Derby and making you money. Thanks to Scully and to Gary Palmisano, Mike Welch, of course, and Nick with the help here, and, of course, the draw team, Travis Stone and everybody. I'm going to hustle over to the Aristides Lounge and join Donna Brothers and Ed DeRosa for a little Twins Buyers instant read preview and talk Derby with the two of them. Back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Sirius XM at the races, replay 6 to 9. And at the website, Casey will get the show mounted up as soon as possible. And we'll talk to you in the morning. I'll get the final plays. The selections are up. I got to add the plays to it. And I'll do that after I get off the Twin Spires preview. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.